This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 18th at 11:08 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like, state lawmakers will actually meet deadlines, both real and imagined. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and the Snollygosters who belatedly pass budgets and try to save nuclear power plants. I'm Mike Thompson. Steve Brown is off this week, and word is he's not even paying attention while he's on vacation, so good for him. Coming up later in the podcast, two senators, two trips to the border, two different stories. But first, Ohio state government has a budget for the next 2 years. It was 17 and a half days late, but the House and Senate agreed on a $69 billion budget for the next 2 years. Governor DeWine signed it. The big takeaway, we all get a 4% income tax cut. That's less than what the Senate and House originally proposed. Governor DeWine didn't want to give us any tax break. That small business tax break, the one enjoyed by sole proprietors, that stays largely in place, but lawyers and lobbyists won't get it anymore. There is $69 billion worth of more stuff in that budget. Here to help us understand how every penny is spent, well, maybe not how every penny is spent, but most of them, is Joe Ingles, State House reporter for Ohio Public Radio. Joe, welcome to Snollygoster.
Well, great to be here, and I don't know the how every penny is spent, so I can't really help you with that.
You know
that
what?
One, Mike.
I don't think state lawmakers know how every penny is spent either.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Anyway, it's been a long week for you and the State House crew down there, so we appreciate you taking the time to help us digest it all, put a bow on this state budget. Let's start with the one that affects all of us. The House wanted to give us a 6.5% income tax cut. The Senate wanted to give us a bigger one, 8% across the board. Why are we only getting 4%? Should we be disappointed?
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends. You know, Governor, as you pointed out, Governor DeWine didn't want to give any tax break. We do know that the House version wanted to get rid of that big, they call it the BID. It's the tax break for small businesses.
Yeah.
Pass through for the LLCs.
Yeah, sole proprietors, yeah.
Yes, and the House wanted to make it so that people who... you could only get that break tax-free the first 100,000. Then right now it is 250,000. You can earn up to 250,000 in your LLC and not pay a dime of taxes on it. The House wanted to lower that down to 100,000, and there was a big fight over that. And what ended up happening is that they went back to the $250,000 that we currently have, and we know that they got a break, they got a tax break there. And then this tax break, the other tax break, is for people who don't pay their bills that way, who are not a small business, who are workers who get a paycheck.
Yeah.
And they are going to get that 4%, which is more than what they would normally get, you know, under the budget that was initially proposed by Governor DeWine. I think 4% just became the landing point for them.
Wow. So, I mean, is there any talk that they could only give the 4% across the board to every Ohioan because they had to keep the small business sole proprietor tax break in place as it stood?
Yeah, well, that was the big thing. I mean, they knew that they were going to have to keep that small business tax break in to keep the Senate happy because the Senate was insisting on that.
And Mike DeWine wanted to keep it as well.
Well, and Mike DeWine was wanting to keep it as well. But, you know, here's the rub. When you look at the House, Larry Householder, the House Speaker, he got into that position largely because of the Democrats in the House. And the Democrats in the House, they don't like that tax break. They say it's, you know, it takes away way too much money that should be used for other things in the state, and they point out that it doesn't necessarily generate new jobs for people, which was one of the said reasons for putting it in place a few years ago anyway.
Yeah.
So they wanted to get rid of that. This is all kind of a compromise deal here, and there are still a lot of Democrats who are not happy at all that the revisions were not made on that bid.
You know, there's a lawyer joke here, too, but also not happy are lawyers and lobbyists who are sole
Correct.
Proprietors. They somehow are now, they can't get any of the tax break. They get wiped out completely. And now I'm hearing complaints from that sector of the economy, lawyers and lobbyists, who claim
Right.
this is unconstitutional. You can't just single out two professions and say, hi, sorry, you got to pay full taxes, but, you know, contract writers and other sole proprietors, you know, accountants and things like that, they don't have to pay the taxes. What does the legislature have against lawyers and lobbyists?
Well, I don't know that we want to phrase it that way, but I think that one of the things that was pointed out is those two professions tend to not, you know, have a lot of people working underneath them. They don't hire people. That was one of the said reasons for this, but you know, Senator Matt Huffman brought up, and he's an attorney, by the way, he said, you know, you've got to have a reason, a basis for making these carve-outs for these certain professions. And he says there really isn't a reason for it. And therefore, he thinks it's unconstitutional. I think that's something that listeners ought to be aware of and watch for, because I think we're going to see a lawsuit
at
some point on that.
I would take that money to the bank. I mean,
I
think it had a bad look because a lot of, as you mentioned, a lot of state lawmakers, members of the House and Senate, are lawyers on the side.
Right.
And they were benefiting from this.
Exactly.
So you could argue a conflict of interest there, but to throw out the entire profession, you know, I could see a legal argument against that.
Exactly.
Getting to some of the money that the additional money that we're going to see additional money for wraparound services. Those are the social services that school kids get before and after school to try to keep them healthy, keep them happy, so they learn better and become better students, and you know, in the long run, better employees for all the companies and organizations in the state.
Right. $125 million for wraparound services that the House targeted for low-income students. $120 million for children's services to help kids who are put in foster care or affected by the opioid crisis. And there's money in there for mental health services in the school and treatment for addicts. Those are the kind of things that Governor DeWine had wanted, and he ended up getting in this budget.
Yeah, I mean, after a state budget is approved, you get the flurry of press releases from social service groups and advocacy groups. And most of the ones who are involved with social services were praising the state budget and thanking them for adding money to these services. So,
well, and, you know, let's remember here, Ohio is among the lowest in spending in some of those areas, too, and in the nation. And so this actually brings them up to, you know, a somewhat more acceptable level.
Schools played a role in here. There's different graduation standards, but the budget did not totally remove the school takeover provision in state law.
Yep. That was a problem for Democrats, you know, Mike, because they really wanted those. There are three different school districts in Ohio that have been taken over by the state. We've got Youngstown, we've got East Cleveland, and we've got Lorain. Those three are under state control right now. The Democrats are not happy about how that's being handled, and they wanted basically a moratorium for those school districts, you know, give it back to the locals, let them deal with it while they figure out what they want to do with all this.
So they do get a one-year moratorium, but they don't. The system remains in place until they study it further, which I always love to hear. I'm going to study it further.
Another blue ribbon panel.
Yes, kick the can down the road is another way to call it. You know, Mike DeWine has the legal authority to do line item vetoes. We don't want to get too detailed on here, but any big takeaways from his line item vetoes? I know one of them was additional money for fast-growing school districts was one of his line item vetoes.
Yeah, and that actually would take place in the next budget. It was setting it up for the next budget. It was it basically benefited wealthier school districts. For a long time, some of these wealthy school districts said, hey, we're not getting we're not getting nearly what other people are getting or other school districts are getting. And they also point out that they're not getting what private schools get for that same kid. So that was meant to, and these school districts have a group, by the way, that represents and lobbies for them down here.
Uh-huh.
And there's been talk about a lawsuit over school funding.
Ooh.
Because they don't get what they feel is their fair share on that.
A lawsuit over school funding. That has never happened before.
It never has.
That would be interesting. Let's see how that turns out.
You
know, of course, for us Irish Americans, perhaps the biggest change in the state budget is that the budget, of all things, the state budget, the $69 billion state budget, has the power to move the state's primary to St. Patrick's Day, March 17th.
Right.
So how that affects the Irish American vote, we don't know. I don't know. So.
Well, it is a primary. So
yes,
it's
a primary.
You're not talking a general election, so it's not going to definitely benefit Republicans in any way. It shouldn't.
It's just amazing what there's no spending there at all. I mean, they do spend money on elections, I suppose, but it's not. The things they tuck into the state budget is amazing.
Well, who knows? There might be some green beer specials associated somehow with this.
Right.
You know, if they can figure out a way to get around the law to do that, I'm sure that.
So the sole proprietor who owns like Leitrim's Pub there, he can enjoy his green beer, $250,000 of his income tax free. You know, it came down this one party rule at the state house. Republicans have control of the House, the Senate, the governor's office. So it came down to the House versus Senate, Larry versus Larry, House Speaker Householder versus Senate President Obhoff. Was there a winner, Joe?
Well, it certainly looks like the Senate President, Larry Obhoff, got more of what he wanted, at least initially, you know, from what we're seeing right now. But, you know, the strange thing is that the Democrats, they had a say in this budget.
Yep.
They're not used to that. You know, usually the minority party doesn't get as much of a say, but the reason they had a say is that some of the Republicans, including Governor DeWine, wanted some of the very same things that some of the Democrats wanted. That's the reason we saw so much money in the wraparound services and things to help low-income kids and things to help people on Medicaid. Democrats got a huge win because some of the restrictions that some conservative Republicans had wanted to put on Medicaid expansion, some of those things, they didn't do that. In the end, that didn't get included in here. So they had some wins here, too.
All right. Wrapping up, the state budget, we will not have to do this for another 2 years. We're not going to do the thing that Kasich did, right, Joe? With mid-biennium? I hated that term.
I don't bet on anything now, Mike, you know, because all it takes is for, you know, something to happen in the economy, and we're right back at it.
Yeah, but anyway, this process is over, much to the delight of all those folks at the State House who had to put in long nights and weekends over the past few months. Joe Engels, State House reporter for Ohio Public Radio. Thanks for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Well, thanks for having me.
One more thing going on at the State House, of course, is the so-called clean energy bill, which isn't as clean, which also is known as the nuclear power plant bailout, which became the nuclear power plant and coal power plant bailout. That's still on hold, even though First Energy Solutions, the company that says we are going to shut down these two nuke plants in northern Ohio if we don't have a bill by June 30th, even though that deadline is now 3 weeks old, the House still and Senate still have not reached an agreement on that bill. The Senate passed its version this week, but the House fell just a few votes short. Apparently, a couple members were on vacation, didn't expect to be there, so they'll take that back up in August. That's the plan anyway. And lo and behold, that deadline has passed and the nuke plants are not being shut down. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ohio's two U.S. senators went on a road trip last weekend. No better place to visit in the heat of the midsummer than the U.S.-Mexico border in Texas. Of course, they went to check out for themselves what is going on with immigrants and asylum seekers crossing the border. They told their stories during their weekly, separate conference calls with reporters this week.
Hey, folks. Thanks for joining us. This is Sherrod Brown. I want to talk a bit about my visit to El Paso yesterday, a visit to the border, my job on this visit.
Thank you for being on. Last night we had the annual Brown-Portman softball game. Some of you were there. I appreciate your coming out.
Right away there, you sensed the difference in tone. Did you hear it? Now, Brown and Portman did not travel together. Brown visited a migrant shelter and the port of entry at El Paso. Portman was 800 miles east at a processing center and a border patrol center near Brownsville. Neither man visited a detention center where there have been reports of dire conditions. Let's take a few minutes to compare their memories of the trip, their travel logs, shall we say. This was Sherrod Brown's overall take of his experience.
I saw up close the inhumanity and coldness of President Trump's family separation policy.
This is Rob Portman's takeaway.
We clearly have a crisis on that border. The processing centers for the single men are just absolutely packed, and the conditions are bad because we can't send them to the ICE facilities because the ICE beds were not funded in the $4.6 billion. And that's because Democrats had refused previously to fund expansion of ICE beds.
Portman referring there to the $4.6 billion border aid compromise bill passed last month by Congress. We've heard and read difficult stories from the border. Each senator, again during separate calls, each senator was asked to share an anecdote, a story they heard from migrants they spoke with. This time we'll start with Senator Portman.
But of the five or six I spoke to, you know, very forthcoming, very friendly, and said, you know, they were fleeing a tough situation in terms of jobs and poverty. One man kind of summed it up when he said, you know, I want a better life for my kids, and pointed to his daughter. That's why I came here, and that's understandable. I mean, the wages in the United States are 10 to 20 times more than they are in Honduras, where this gentleman is from.
Brown also met with a migrant from Honduras.
Start with a woman and her son and her 17-year-old son, her daughter, that are now in the United States. Their case is being adjudicated still. They came from Honduras. They fled the violence. Her husband she believes, killed, but they don't know where he is. This boy and girl's father, by drug lords, in all likelihood. Another family talked about that someone in their family, in their immediate family, was kidnapped and then released because, and then they are threatened, and the authorities and the kidnappers have kind of let them know that it could very well happen again if they don't find some way to get their cousins in the United States to send them money.
Both men had sympathies for the border control agents and others working at the border.
I think the Customs and Border Protection people on the ground are doing the best they can in an impossible situation. I think we need to support them, but we also need to change some of these laws and policies.
I don't blame the people that were on duty there. They are federal employees that are mostly doing their jobs. I blame the president, vice president, and the top people at these agencies who clearly are implementing a policy that's anti-American and un-American and contrary to our values and morally reprehensible by when you separate children from their parents, period.
And that's where Brown lays the blame for the crisis, on the Trump administration. Senator Portman lays the blame on the system, on congressional inaction.
This trip was just a reminder of how dire the situation is and how badly Congress needs to act. We have to change some of these laws and rules in order to alleviate the crisis. The system's being overwhelmed.
So there you have it. Two U.S. senators from the same state, but from different parties with very different takes, or somewhat different takes, on what they do agree is a very bad situation on the border. Both say Congress needs to act, but there is no sign, absolutely no sign, of that happening anytime soon. In other news, of course, Donald Trump was accused of being a racist this week. He tweeted that four congresswomen of color should go back to where they came from. You know the story. Well, Brown and Portman differed in tone when asked to comment on those remarks as well.
I have said that I think it was divisive and wrong to say that. And I've said that I wish the president and the administration would talk more about issues that bring us together, particularly the strong economy.
Well, the president has shown repeatedly since, from the Central Park Five to the questioning President Obama's birth, to his spot to Charlottesville, to his policies, has shown again and again that he's a racist, period. And he's almost proud of it, the way that he talks. And that's just, it's just very sad.
All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. As I said, Steve Brown is off this week enjoying his vacation, trying to take a two-week break from Snollygoster watching. So no Snollygoster of the week this week. We urge you to nominate your choice for the shrewdest politician or the shrewdest political move. You can send us an email at snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, please spread the word about this podcast. Give us a good review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Tell your friends about us. Tell your enemies about us. We're trying to build an audience here for Snollygoster here. For Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media, I'm Mike Thompson.